who's gonna benefit in a long run? Who's gonna be better for Europe in the United States in a long run? A Biden type presidency or Donald Trump type presidency? Do you think that in a long run Europe would be the way that Donald Trump is dealing with Europe? Do you think that that would make Europe be more sane? Just considering, reconsidering what they're doing right now and making, I don't know, some sort of to make new policies in terms of dealing with the United States and the East and the West.
Joe Biden would have sustained the rules-based international order, model that would have perpetuated Europe's permanent status as a subservient lot to America. Donald Trump is trying to create the conditions for an American withdrawal from Europe so that Europe will have to stand up on its own. But you see, people would say, well, that's what Europe's trying to do. No, it's not. Every proposal that Europe has put forward in anything always is contingent upon an American backstop. Even the brave French and British proposal to put 30,000 troops into Ukraine, not on the front lines, but there's a deterrence, requires an American backstop. That means you're not independent. That means you're not capable of anything. If you need us, you're nothing. And right now, Europe needs us, can't do anything without us. So therefore, Europe is nothing. So what's best for Europe? To continue down a path of being subservient to the United States, that was because they were pushing forward these policies of antagonism towards Russia, leading towards a nuclear war that would have destroyed all of Europe. Just make it very simple. Biden would have destroyed Europe. A Biden-type approach would have destroyed Europe. Or Trump, who wants to make a truly independent Europe. But, there's this thing called tough love. If my kid's living in the basement and they're now 40 years old, maybe it's time I kick him out of the basement and make him get a job. Make him learn what it's like to pay the bills. Tough love. Oh, it's problematic for the kid when he has to first leave the basement and get that job. They don't want to do that. They're kicking and screaming and all that. But eventually, they get the job, they get a paycheck, they pay their rent, and they go, wait a minute, I'm independent. I'm my own person. Now, they don't live under my larger social economic umbrella, but they don't get my club membership and all that, but they get to be themselves. And by creating good relations with Russia, they get to be themselves without fear of the gang next door coming in and beating them up. You see, because we're going to be a good relations with Russia, therefore Europe will be a good relations with Russia. Donald Trump is the best model for Europe going forward, one can imagine. It's the only chance Europe ever has of becoming relevant. And again, it won't be relevant as a singularity, but be relevant the way old Europe used to be, where Germany was a nation state that people had diplomatic relations with. And Germany carried out its own independent foreign policy. France did as well. Italy did as well. That's the future of Europe, to break it down in this nonsense of a European singularity and to start talking about a collection of sovereign states.
For many years, Scott, the Eastern European were looking at the Western European to learn from them. Understand the thing, and right now it seems that do you think that we are getting to the point that the Western Europeans should look at the Eastern Europeans to learn about how can they decide about their policies, their foreign policies, and what would be beneficial for them in a long run?
No.
How do you see the difference between
the Eastern
and the Western part of Europe?
I mean, what you want the suicidal chihuahua trio of the Baltic states?
Baltic states are just little states. I'm talking about those countries who have tradition, who have long history, and
like what? Poland? They have a tradition of getting their asses kicked, and they'll get their asses kicked again. I mean, if Poland, let me just tell you what the future of Poland could be. Are you ready? Here, let me put a scenario out there for you. Let's say Germany screws around with America, plays a fundamental game of we're going to get you. If I were in the CIA, I'm not, but if I were, I would go to Donald Trump and say, okay, this is what we need to do. Take a look at the last election map. Do you see something there? A pattern. AFD in the East. The others in the West. We need to break Germany up into two separate states. We need an East Germany and a West Germany again. So we need to impose economic warfare on the West, and we need to promote economic integration between East Germany and Russia. All right. Now, as we bring down Ukraine, we need to bring Western Ukraine into the mix. See, we're going to get the Poles on this one now, because we're going to offer Western Ukraine to the Poles. And when they bite and take the bait, then we're going to offer the return of German territory seized by the Poles at the end of World War II back to East Germany to make East Germany even stronger. We're going to break Poland up. We're going to give Poland the biggest nightmare they ever had, which is Western Ukrainian nationalists. And then we're going to weaken Poland by stripping away their German territories and giving that back to East Germany, making East Germany more relevant, weakening West Germany. You see what I just did there? And that, don't tell me it can't be done, because it can be done. Everything I talked about is being talked about right now. Every piece is being talked about. It's a potential. All we need is the CIA to go in and do what the CIA does. That's what they do for a living. Now, ideally, I wouldn't want that to happen. Ideally, I'd like Germany to wake up and say, oh, we want peace. Then we don't need to do that. And Poland can stay intact. But if you want to screw with America, you're screwing with the Godfather. Okay? We do bad stuff. We're not angels. And we have a CIA that's expert at taking your pathetic little European countries apart. And we will do that if you want that to happen. So my advice to Germany is stop being stupid. Okay, you just had an act of national stupidity electing this moron in there who is going to come in and he's going to commit political suicide within 6 months. But if you sustain the stupidity, then we have to destroy you.
So you don't see any sort of difference between Hungary together with Slovakia and the way that Germany is talking about, or France?
Hungary's too small. And first of all, Hungary's not a united nation. They have a very strong leader, Viktor Orban, but we see hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. So it's a fundamentally divided nation on the issue of this, that, or the other thing. It comes down to the economy. Those nations that have retained their energy connectivity with Russia are nations that recognize the importance of cheap energy, and therefore their policies reflect that. Those nations that have separated themselves from cheap Russian energy are nations now that have committed too much political capital into this divorce. And now they're trying to make the divorce work, but it's never going to work. Like I said, you know, when you're Germany and you once had all that cheap Russian gas coming in, and now you're 80% dependent upon expensive American liquid natural gas that you can't afford, you know, so I think this isn't about, you know, who's wiser in terms of their political approach. None of them are wise. It's just that some have been able to hold on to economic advantages that dictate political outcomes, and others have divorced themselves from those advantages and are now paying the price. But at the end of the day, Europe is going to go where the economy takes them. There is no principle in Europe. There's no deep guiding principle of European unity and European values. What is a European value? There is no European value. There is no European democracy. How can you say there's a democracy when you have Germans running around arresting people for posting stuff on the internet? I mean, this is not democracy. When you have the German government saying, you know, the second largest political party is going to be cut out. Nobody's allowed to do business with them. We're going to try and disenfranchise them judicially. That's not democracy. That's not democracy. There's no such thing as European democracy. It's Europe is a continent in disarray and chaos. And the solution to European disarray and chaos will come through the economy, and it will be energy driven. And that's just the reality of it.
Do you think it's all about energy, and is there any sort of strategy in Europe in terms of energy? Because after all, there has to be some sort of vision, some sort of strategy toward Russia. The way they're talking about, they know what Donald Trump thinks right now about the conflict in Ukraine. They're trying to insist on those failed policies of Joe Biden, and they want to harm Russia even more than what has been done so far to Russia. Do they really want a better relationship with Russia? Do they really see a better relationship with Russia? Or they're considering getting energy from somewhere else? I don't know who's going to be able to provide them with that.
I think European leaders have been held prisoner by American policy prerogatives for so long that they don't know what they think. I mean, it's impossible for me to get in the heads of Europeans. How? Work with me on this one, Nima. Olaf Scholz, not a stupid man. I mean, educated, experienced politician. Why did he stand there like a cuckold husband watching his wife get raped by his neighbor when Joe Biden said, I will blow up Nord Stream 2? Why did he do that? Because he is not the leader of a sovereign state. Germany is completely beholden to the United States. And he allowed this to happen. And then he allowed the further, extinguishment of German connectivity with Russian energy to the point now where the German economy is just destroyed. It's deindustrialized. Can we really speak about German leadership and, you know, what the Germans are thinking? You can't say that for any of the nations, because they have all in one way or another sold out to the old America. And what's happened is these leaders have put so much political capital in sustaining that system that they are defined by that system. Therefore, they cannot work with a system that is deviating from that fundamentally, which is Donald Trump. So it's the equivalent of a person, a drowning person in the ocean. They are lashing out at anything to save themselves. But they're going to go down. They're done. Nobody's going to save them. The old model cannot be resuscitated because Donald Trump just killed it. Just killed it. And remember, I just want to remind the people that, well, the establishment can come back. Guys, we're into the first month of a 4-year revolution. And look what he's done. The first month. Wait till we have that conversation about the first 100 days, or the first 6 months, or the first year. This time next year, if we're still talking, take a look at the revolution then and realize there's 3 more years to go. The deep state is never recovering from this. Every aspect of the deep state will be deconstructed, because the deep state was reliant upon the money that the military-industrial congressional complex and other links, you know, pharmaceutical, whatever you want to, you know, however you want to describe it, the way the deep state worked is they sucked this money and they turned it. The money became the blood that fed this cancerous tumor that was defining what America was. Trump isn't willing to let this tumor continue to exist. He's cut off the blood supply and he's, you know, taking a scalpel and removing it from America. It's never coming back, ever. Which means that any foreign entity that continues to define itself based upon the necessity to sustain that which is being killed by Trump condemns themselves to death. In Europe, by continuing to try and breathe life back into that Biden-era model, it's just condemning themselves to death.
How do you see the western part of Ukraine, considering in case of having a Ukrainian settlement between Donald Trump and Russia? What would be the western Ukraine? Are they gonna be together? I'm talking about various ethnicities in that part: Armenians, Hungarians, Polish, and all of these various ethnicities in the western part of Ukraine, or we're gonna see the collapse of the western part of Ukraine, or the situation would get worse for Europe and Russia in terms of security?
First of all, let's stop talking about Europe and Russia. There is no connectivity there. Russia's situation is going to get better because Russia's made a strategic decision to deal with the only nation that counts, and that's the United States. So let's not equate Europe's collapse and its, you know, and the troubles that will befall Europe with anything to deal with Russia. Russia's already built an economic firewall. Europe doesn't count anymore, doesn't matter, is irrelevant to Russia. The sanctions, Russia doesn't need. This doesn't impact Russia at all. And if the United States engages with Russia, it undoes everything about those sanctions. So we cannot speak as if Europe holds any leverage over Russia. They don't. None whatsoever. Western Ukraine. I mean, this is a problem. This is a real problem. We are dealing with a diseased people, ideologically diseased people who believe in something that you can't be allowed to believe in anymore. It's the equivalent of us trying to say at the end of World War II, well, we're going to let Bavaria hang out and the Nazi party be there. You know, it's okay. The war's over. We destroyed the German army. Don't worry about it. But in Bavaria, the Nazi party gets to stay there and they can have Hitler holidays and they can do all that kind of stuff. Reenact the Munich beer push and all that. And do you think anybody would sit there and go, that's a good plan? That's a really good plan. No, it's a horrible plan. So we had to denazify Nazi Germany. You do that by arresting a number of leaders, put them on trial and hang them by the neck until dead or shoot them. There must be blood. Go take a look at the Nuremberg Tribunal. The decisions that were made there. Examples had to be made. Examples had to be made to ensure that the German people understood that that which had governed them is illegal, illegitimate, an abomination to the world. And so examples had to be made. They hung, gosh, was it 12 of the 21 were hung. Only three were acquitted. Everybody else got either life sentences or lengthy prison sentences. That's going to have to happen. Banderas will have to hang by the neck until dead. They will have to. There will have to be trials for these people. They are war criminals, literal war criminals. And the political parties that sustain them have to be disenfranchised and made illegal, just like the Nazi party was. There has to be constitutional changes. Now, this can be done if Donald Trump accedes to the Russian conditions, because Russia has said, I mean, just we know how this is going to be done. It's written in the Istanbul communique how this will be accomplished. All we have to do is say, yes, that's what we're going to do. Now, if we want to make this one of those things where we say, well, that's just too hard to do, and the Russians decide, well, you know, it's better for us to concede on this to get the bigger picture, then we're going to have a problem. And the way you deal with that problem is you give it to the Poles. That'll be the Russian solution, I believe. I don't speak for Russia. I don't know. I've heard within Russian circles that there is talk about carving that off. But this creates a lot of problems. I mean, for Russia, it's not a big deal. I mean, you know, hey, Poland, all you have to do for the Russians is just shout out, Volin, Volin, Volin. And the Poles get all round up, and then you give them Western Ukraine. They go in there and they'll slaughter everybody, which is a solution in its own right. But then what happens is you've created a precedent of carving up European borders that were supposed to be not able to be carved up anymore. And if you give away Western Ukraine to the Poles, then you're going to give away Ruthenia, and you're going to give away Carpathia, and you're going to give away, and you're going to see that Ukraine will be carved up. And then what you do is you open up the door for Russia to hold a referendum in Odessa, Kharkov, Dnepropetrovsk, Mykolaiv, and get those Russian populations to agree that those lands will, in 3 to 5 years, chop off over to Russia, and you're left with a tiny little rump state called Kievan Rus, and it's got no economic viability. That's not a good solution, because then again, it opens up to the door of someday Germany will become, if the CIA doesn't break it up, will become a unified nation of great potential, and they will turn to Poland and say, yeah, you got your Western stuff back, we want ours back too. And now we have the potential of German-Poland conflict. So, you know, a lot of people, they'll say, oh, you can't give in to the Russians. You can't let them dictate the outcome in Ukraine. I say you have to let them dictate the outcome in Ukraine, because otherwise the solution is one that will be disastrous for Europe in the long run, that will lead to the lack of recognition of the permanence of borders, and will just pick off a scab on wounds that haven't healed. We know they haven't healed because we see the animosity between Germany and Poland about that border today. You know, so this is a real problem. So I think Western Ukraine, my feeling is that the Trump administration is paying more attention to what the Russians say than many people realize. And that they've bought into the notion of the reality-based premise of much of the Russian arguments, the factual accuracy of much of the Russian arguments. And if they do that, I think they'll find the wisdom of the Russian approach, which is denazification, as conceived by Russia, must be implemented in post-conflict Ukraine.
Do you see Russia accepting European troops or U.S. troops on Ukrainian soil, or maybe Chinese troops? I don't know.
China's not going to put troops on the border. There won't be a foreign. There might be monitors, lightly armed monitors from foreign countries that have nothing to do with Europe. If I were the Russians, I'd get the Kazakhs to do it, the Belarusians to do it. We could get a Uzbek contingent, a Tajik contingent, not China. China's a Security Council nation. But I'm just saying that there's ways to get nations to provide police forces to do border control operations. But the idea of a peacekeeping force, people forget what peacekeeping is all about. In order for there to be peacekeeping, there has to be a peace to be kept. That means both sides have to agree to something, and then the peacekeepers come in and implement that which the both sides have agreed to. You can't have NATO come in and be a one-sided implementation, because the sole purpose of the Macron-Starmer force is to provide a deterrence against Russia. That's not a peacekeeping force. That's a force of war. And then Russia will have to kill them all, and they will kill them all. So we need to be careful with the terminology we use and what we expect of this. There will be no European forces on the ground in Ukraine. There will be no American forces on the ground in Ukraine. There will be no significant military forces on the ground in Ukraine. If this thing is going to go down, there will be a peace. The Ukrainian military will be demilitarized. That means there is no Ukrainian military in the way. You might have 50,000, maybe more, 80,000, Ukrainian forces that will become a border guard or a coast guard to protect the sovereign borders. And then they may be supplemented by international observers working with the Ukrainian border guards and with the Russians on both sides to ensure that, you know, the agreement is policed properly. But Russia is not seeking to create a demilitarized zone. Russia is seeking to create a new border where Russia is next to a Ukraine that's no longer postured to be a threat to Russia, a Ukraine that can be economically developed by Russia so that eventually this Ukraine becomes in political and economic union with Russia in similar fashion to what Belarus has become. That's the Russian vision of Ukraine. They don't want Ukraine to be this failed nation state next door to them. You know, Russia understands the importance of neighbors, the importance of good relations with neighbors. And so from the Russian perspective, if you're going to be a neighbor with Ukraine, that Ukraine has to be a vibrant nation capable of sustaining its population in meaningful fashion. And you can't do that. But you can't allow NATO in, and you really don't want them oriented towards the European Union. So what will happen is that Russia will shape events so that post-conflict Ukraine is governed by a pro-Russian government that will seek to turn to Russia, not the European Union, for its reconstruction needs. And the United States, I think what we're going to be seeing here is normally I wouldn't go on this limb, but I think it's just so obvious. The United States, Russia, and Ukraine will enter into a three-way mineral-based economic exploitation development pact, that because this provides the foundation of security guarantees. Through economic relations comes the security guarantees. The United States isn't about the militarization of this problem. They're about actually transforming this into an economic opportunity for all involved. And I think when you speak of, you know, the United States can't develop Ukraine's mineral wealth and Russia's mineral wealth in isolation of one another. So we're going to see a unifying compact that creates the ability of Ukraine and Russia to develop strong strategic economic ties. And with these strong strategic economic ties comes the security guarantee that people are looking for. And the United States will be a part of this as well. I think that's the direction we're heading. And if you have these strong economic ties, those economic ties define political outcomes. It's the economy, stupid. And again, if you get Ukraine on the path towards reconstruction, where you have meaningful jobs, meaningful reinvestment of profits from this exploitation back into Ukraine, then you'll see the strategic genius of Russia not destroying Ukrainian infrastructure. Because for 3 years, people, why are Russia blowing up the trains? Why isn't Russia blowing up the bridges? Why aren't they blowing up the dams? Because one day this war will end. And Russia wants Ukraine to succeed economically. And the decisions not to blow up the bridges, not to blow up the dams, not to blow up the tunnels, the rail lines, will come back and facilitate the rebirth of Ukraine economically. The less money you have to spend on infrastructure development or redevelopment, the more money you can spend on other economic issues, because this problem will be resolved economically, not militarily. And there's where Europe's making the mistake. They keep looking for a military solution where the problem is not being defined by Russia and the United States militarily. Like I said, I'm a little hesitant to go out on this because who knows what Trump and Putin are going to come up with, but they've put enough hints out there. And if the United States, if Donald Trump is talking about developing Ukrainian mineral wealth and working with the Russians to develop mineral wealth, you can't do that in isolation. The security guarantee comes from the joining of this opportunity. And I believe that's the direction we're heading. And that will dictate economic outcomes inside Ukraine going forward, which will dictate political outcomes.
How would a Ukrainian settlement influence the situation in the Middle East and between Israel and Palestine?
I mean, the Middle East had nothing to do with this problem starting, so it's not part of the solution. To the extent that Russia would be liberated to put more diplomatic resources into the Middle East, working with the Turks on the issue of Syria, for instance, working with Iran. We just saw Lavrov go to Iran and reiterate security pacts, etc. This is an important element of, creating a firewall against any American military intervention. The United States doesn't want to go to war with Iran, but there's a need to address the question of Iran's nuclear program to the satisfaction of the United States. Resolve the Ukraine thing, get good American-Russian relations where we're talking to one another and cooperating with one another. Now we have the potential to bring Russia into the Iranian equation and stabilize that. And if you stabilize Iran, you take some pressure off of Israel. Russia, as people should know, played a very important role last year in bringing 14 Palestinian factions together to talk about creating a potential governing authority in a post-conflict Palestine. They turned that baton over to the Chinese, who took it a next step in this past summer. If Russia's liberated from this, and again, if Russia and the United States are working together as partners, now Russia can meet with their American counterparts and pitch this new governing entity as a replacement for Hamas. So there's potential for a lot of positive you know, role to be played here, if, you know, but it requires two things. One, Russia having normalized relations with the United States along the full scope and spectrum of, you know, diplomatic interaction, and two, Russia being able to free up its economic, military, and political resources so that it can, you know, invest them elsewhere. There's a significant investment in Russian capacity in this Ukrainian conflict right now. Peace would allow Russia to redistribute this this capacity in a way that would, you know, further peaceful development in a whole broad range of geopolitical problems.